Hi there, I'm board-certified professional organizer Kathy Burns. I'm really glad you're here. This podcast is designed for busy entrepreneurs just like you who want to take better control of your business and move forward with less stress and more success. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The Organize Energize podcast is produced for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at thepodcast.organizeandenergize.com. Come back often and feel free to add this podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Organize Energy and Facebook. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Hi, everyone. Today, you are going to meet Andrew Thorpe King. He's the author of Failure Rules. I love this. The 5 Rules of Failure for Entrepreneurs, Creatives, and Authentics. Andrew is also an executive fintech banker, a spy novelist, a speaker, a punk rocker, a podcaster, and an ex-bodybuilder, cigar lover, and serial entrepreneur. I love this guy. He founded 2 independent record labels, Thorpe Records and Sailor's Grave Records, and has invested in many spaces, including online lending, fitness, lead generation, and independent music. So this is going to be a fun interview. I can't wait for you to meet Andrew. So let's get going. All right. I am pleased to introduce you to Andrew Thorpe King, who is the author of Failure Rules. Yeah. Woo. You guys are going to love this topic. I know as entrepreneurs, we all have failure, and it's a matter of how we're going to go about understanding it that helps us move forward. So welcome to the show, Andrew. I'm so happy to have you on.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you publish your book?
This came out end of 2022, September 2022. So it's been, you know, three-ish years now, going on 4, I suppose. And I've been promoting it pretty consistently and heavily over that time, going on podcasts, Instagram, doing some live events, book signings, a lot of book signings at cigar lounges, which is one of my niches. So it's been very fun seeing some impact, and it's been a really great experience.
I think that's great. So let's back up a minute and talk about your story, your entrepreneurial journey, and then we'll lead into what made you write this book, which I am waiting to hear about that.
Okay. So backstory. So, I mean, you know, your listeners would have heard my bio and the intro. Kind of started out in my 20s on these off-road entrepreneurial adventuring kind of paths, right? Didn't really have kind of a formal, steady, high-earning W-2 job till I was 40 years old, before I really kind of matured into being a fintech banker. So started my own record label, and then also was working in the music industry. So I had kind of, vertical integration there. I was kind of getting like a paid education by day in the music industry. And at night I was doing my record label. At one point, it got to be too much to juggle it too. And I went full time with my record label after having some success. And started a second label as well with a different aesthetic and different genres. And then ran into some turbulence and kind of, you know, really hit the unknown, obstacles that entrepreneurs can run into. And I think that's really when I cut my teeth and my experience with how to navigate complex, difficult, sometimes even catastrophic situations came into play, which then served me later on. After learning those lessons kind of the hard way as I got into other entrepreneurial efforts, owning a gym, running an online lending company, publishing the book and doing all that stuff.
Yeah, I know that, the music industry is a tough cookie. I was in the industry for a little while as an audio engineer, so I get it, and worked for a record label as well. Did you start your record label because you were a musician and you wanted to publish your stuff, or because you had friends who were musicians you wanted to publish?
I would say more the latter, but mostly just because I was a fan. I mean, I was in a band for a time singing. I wouldn't call myself a musician. Being in a hardcore punk band and being a singer, that's not really being a musician. You know, you're a front man, you're a performer, you're a messenger at that point. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. But I just had a real passion for that type of music. It had really buoyed me and given me a lot of strength during hard times and transitions in my life. So to me, I thought it was a really, really valuable art form. I think at the time I just got done doing a professional bodybuilding show, and I was working in a steel plant, graduating college with an English degree, was trying to find my way. And I started writing for a music magazine, which didn't pay any money. And I loved writing. And then I just thought, well, you know what? I knew a friend that was running a record label, so I shadowed him, learned a little bit about it, and decided to just go out on a limb and charge my credit cards to sign my first band, and just started going on the ride. And you know, today I've released over 100 releases, and you know, have you know a pretty good catalog. So yeah, that was really it. It was really the idea of like, how to monetize this hobby and this passion and marry money and meaning, which has been really a thread and a theme and a challenge and a struggle throughout my life, because you know it always seems like trying to find that balance is difficult. You're either making money but you have no meaning, or you have a lot of meaning but you have no money, and to have something where it, maybe it's not 50% balance, but at least you know the right amount in each bucket to keep you going, that's always been a challenge. And for me, I found that over time I have to have multiple pursuits and kind of a complex way of viewing my work life to accomplish that.
Yeah, I think that's such an entrepreneurial journey. If you have time, you don't have money. If you have money, you don't have time. That's typically the way that it kind of rotates. And the idea is, how do you have time and money at the same time? And so for you, sounds like it was diversification. So what was your next step? Do you still have, well, first off, do you still have your record labels?
I do, yeah. I haven't released a record since 2018, so
Okay.
it's all, you know, passive income at this point. And I would say maybe 15% of the catalog drives over 80% of the re revenue, you know, the old 80-20 rule kind of thing, you
Yeah.
know, around that. But I'm still in touch with that scene, and some of my artists are still touring and they'll need product for the road. And you know, and you know, I really kind of touch back into the scene some more as I release Failure Rules, because a lot of the content in here is kind of peppered with quotes from music and anecdotes and case studies from certain musicians. And so, you know, as I promoted this, I was able to get on a lot of music podcasts in that space and kind of connect the dots between what I see as like this through line between like the entrepreneurial spirit with the DIY punk rock do it yourself spirit, you know, with just the general spirit of a creative or someone who's pursuing unorthodox off-road paths that don't have some sort of prepackaged blueprint to follow. And so, you know, I explore that thread a lot in the book.
Yeah, that's the true entrepreneurial journey. And kudos to you to actually make money at what your heart sings about. And that's the, you know, no pun intended, but you know, that's what it's all about. It's like I always say, if you can do what you love to do standing on your head asleep, then that's kind of your dharma. And how do you turn your dharma into money, right? And it sounds like you've been able to do that. But let's then lead into the failures book. So, and that's a big fat book, by the way. When you turned it around, like that.
It runs like almost 490 pages. So yeah. And
Yeah.
I thought it would be less when I turned it into the publisher. I thought they were gonna cut, and they came back and prompted me to add another 20,000 words. So I mean, each chapter is like standalone. It has its own beginning, middle, and end, and lesson. So you could pick up any chapter, read it, and not be lost. And so it's snackable, I would say. So even though it's big, it seems to be digestible and snackable for many.
I love that. That's exactly how I did my first book. It's like you can choose whatever chapter you want to choose.
Yeah.
You're going to get something from it. It's not like you have to read the whole darn thing because we
That's right.
know that no one reads the whole book.
Nobody does. Yeah.
It doesn't happen. So,
That's true.
talk to me about a few of your favorite stories inside the book.
Cool. Few of my favorite stories. Well, I mean, I have case studies from all kinds of people, you know, everybody from you know, Winston Churchill to Henry Rollins to Sarah Blakely to Andrew Yang and all kinds of people. You know, just to stay on the well, I would say one of my favorite stories is Gigi Butler, actually, who I ended up giving a copy of the book to, and she did a little video promo for it, which is cool. Gigi Butler owns Gigi's Cupcakes, which is like a national cupcake brand that she started in Nashville. But first, she was trying to be a country singer, and that didn't work out. And so she kind of had this broken dream, but she was entrepreneurial minded. And so she was a house cleaner and just cleaned the houses. She ended up becoming a house cleaner to some Nashville stars through her networking when she's working at Red Lobster. And she ended up working house cleaning for Taylor Swift and some others. And so she was kind of like very ambitious. And one day she was cleaning a house, and she was like cleaning a toilet, you know, and her brother called and said, "Hey, I'm in New York and I'm at this cupcake shop. And these cupcakes are not nearly as good as yours. You should do something with your cupcakes. And so she kind of got off the phone, and there was like this moment she had there, and she just kind of cried a little bit, and then she decided to go start this cupcake shop. But true to the entrepreneurial kind of like obstacles of starting up, like it didn't go well at first. Like she found herself on opening day of her first cupcake shop, with no money to pay her receivables, like over 150 grand in credit card debt and no real market plan. So she really didn't know what she was doing. But she found a way to get through that. She went back cleaning part-time and did that. Like she had to navigate through all of that and really, for the love of, find a way to make it work. And then eventually, now it's a huge franchise and she's doing super well and all that, and it's pretty well known and has a book out and all that. So like to me that resonated because it was somewhat analogous to my journey, right? Like I just was following kind of, it was ready, fire, aim, which I read about in the book, which seems to be reckless and stupid. And shouldn't you do a business plan and analysis and all that? And yeah, you should. You absolutely should. Like Peter Thiel says, even a bad plan is better than no plan. But Mike Tyson also says it's great to have a plan to get punched in the face. So you have to have a plan, but you got to know you're also going to get punched in the face. So plan for having a plan, but iterating when that punch comes, So she, just it was like that for me. Like I maxed out my credit cards and had a plan, but then it didn't work, and then I had to iterate, and then I had to change, and over time for so long. And then that's really it. Like you're not going to know it all at first, and you're not going to know it all before you start, and you're not going to have any guarantee. And you have to accept the fact that even if you ultimately succeed, there's going to be failures and hardship and doubts along the way, and you got to mentally prepare for that. And that's what this book does. It teaches you, it gives you solid lessons, ideas, and mindset guidance on how to, prepare for, metabolize, and optimize failures so you can properly reinvent and pivot along the way.
Yeah, I think that's where it's all about is, thank goodness we don't know everything that's going to hit us. And thank goodness that we don't know the way it's going to go, or we might not even do it.
Yes,
So,
no, that's so true. It's so true. And that's
it's
just so many things in life, right? I mean, that's with having kids, it's with getting
exactly.
married, it's doing all kinds of things, like we almost would do nothing. We'd be paralyzed entirely because almost every meaningful endeavor is going to have a certain amount of risk and is going to have some hardships that we wish never would happen, right? So,
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. So, of all the hardships that you've overcome and been traumatized over and moved past, what's the one that really sticks with you? What was your low point, and how did you personally climb your way out of it?
Yeah, so there was a period of around end of 2013 where I had just gone through a pretty difficult business divorce that totally restructured my financial life. And so I was grappling with how to do that. And at the same time, I was split with my first wife and had a marital divorce. So I went from, all of a sudden, so I had no home to go to by night, no office to go to by day. I was living in a hotel room. It was a very big change on two fronts, work and home all at once, these twin kind of failure events. And so I really kind of just embraced reinvention, revved up my idea machine, and kind of reorganized my portfolio of pursuits. And so, like, in that empty failure space, I ended up beginning the manuscript of Failure Rules. I finished my first spy novel. I started a lead generation company to the online lending space, which ended up doing pretty well. I refashioned my resume in such a way to actually get my first corporate job in fintech, which I'm still now about to enter my 13th year. And I also re resurrected my record labels and released four or five records, secured capital to do that. So like things seemed to be falling apart, but that just gave me the space to reinvent and think about things differently and birth new things. It was like five things with different levels of success over different time periods. But like, that's kind of one of the big ideas of the book is like, use that empty space to really dig deep, decouple your identity from your failures, and find ways to reinvent with the adjacent possibles in your life, and don't look at it as just things are falling apart or things didn't work out, because you never know the windy road of kind of blessing and mystery that can come out of that.
And space is a gift. I mean, my original consultancy is add space to your life, because I know that if you have space, you can thrive. I only became a professional organizer because I had the space and time of a year off to reinvent myself.
Exactly,
Right?
exactly. That's right.
That's why we're talking right now here today, because I want people to know that space is good and
Exactly right.
all around you, nothing. That's a good thing sometimes.
It really is.
The
It
universe
really is.
responds. Yeah, when you need to reinvent, you need a bunch of openness.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I'm
Yeah.
even experiencing it this year. I'm kind of, it's been like a transition year where, downsized, sold my house, moved, a lot of change in my life, all very positive, all very refining. And I've kind of taken some time off from more intensely promoting failure rules. And I'm thinking about what the next phase is going to be. And I've had a lot of empty time, which I'm not used to. And it seems like lack of progress. But then I realize, oh yeah, look at all the notes I wrote for the next book. And I have the outline that was done. And I have the constructs ready for a podcast I'm going to launch. So it's like this hidden season, this incubation stage, and it feels like I'm doing nothing, but I actually am receiving the ideas from the muse, and it's just organizing. And it's just you need that space in order to put the pieces together for something new that's going to emerge.
Yeah, you really do. It's so important. When I see my husband getting frustrated, I'm like, go take a walk. And I'll tell you what, he takes long walks late at night. He's a walker. And he comes back and he's percolated and he has the next thing. He's figured it out. So we all have different ways to create space in our life. And, for it's walking or it's just moving too.
Moving.
Going into a new house and a new place and getting rid of some stuff, it just opens it up for the brain kicks in, and then your brain has the has room to percolate, as you said. I think it's very important.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I mean, the moving for me, I think it's a real symbolic thing too, right? I think like when you're going from season to season in your life, like certain seasons when they're actually in parallel with the physical move, there's something about that that I think kind of releases elasticity in your spirit and your brain to be like, oh yeah, it's okay to change kind of everything if I want now. I'm entering a new design phase of my life for this next chapter, and to me, they've always kind of gone hand in hand.
Yeah, as a professional organizer, I love when people call me and tell me that they're in transition of some sort. I'm like, perfect. This is a perfect time to shift and change because you're already changing. So the momentum's kind of there.
That's right.
It's just a matter of harnessing the momentum and pointing it in the direction, which way you want to sail. Do you want to tack or jibe or whatever it is that you want to do? So yeah, that's important. I love the message of your book. This past year has been like celebrating my successes, because for a long time I'm just like this steamroller, right? I do all this stuff and then I don't stop to pause. How do you celebrate your successes?
How do I celebrate my successes? I mean, well,
Successes.
that came out bad. Maybe that's one way I might celebrate it with my girlfriend. You know what? One of the things in my life, like, I'm not really big into like lots of toys. Like, I have a nice car, but I really don't even care about it. Like, I like it, but it's not a big deal to me. Like, I don't even know much about it. I like it. But for me, like, my big thing is my hot tub. I love hanging out in my hot tub at night, smoking a cigar and getting the fresh air. I have a TV set out there, and that's where I relax. And when my girlfriend comes over, we hang out in there and we'll drink cocktails in the middle of the day on a Sunday. And so, like, that's one of the ways I celebrate, and just hanging out with a lot of my friends, so social stuff. And I would say that's it. Nothing too crazy.
Yeah, I just do Sunday fun days. It's fun stuff.
There
It's
you
the
go.
same thing, hanging out, either doing a bunch of nothing or do a bunch of nothing at a certain location with friends. That's totally cool. Where are you located?
I'm in the Philadelphia suburbs.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. Philly. Okay, so I know that you're artistic creative, so I have to ask this. What's your favorite organizing hack, or what do you fall back on to keep your life orderly? Is there anything in specifically that you use that really works for you?
I don't know about specific, but just generally, I'm always looking for ways to magnify my impact, my wealth through leveraging tech, leveraging capital, engineering wealth, and ledger, leveraging, I mean, just those things. So I'm always looking for ways to outsource things that I don't want to do so I can do the things I really want to do and have more going on in my life. So, I remember when I had my lead generation company, I had a liaison to deal with my data partners. I had a portal, for the software. And I remember like I was could work a day job and I had to kind of automate it to make money without doing much. Or my record labels, it's partners and portals. I got my distribution company, I got the publicist.
Right.
And so it seems like I'm really, really busy with all the things I have my hands on, because the way I set it up, I'm actually not as busy as it sounds when I describe all the things I'm involved in.
Systems. You set up systems
Systems,
that
that's
you
right. Yeah.
delegated
That
so that
actually was
you
the word
can
I was
run.
looking for, leveraging tech, capital, and systems, but it wasn't coming to mind. So,
And you created systems so that it kind of does it for you. I get it. That's something that I teach a lot is, set up systems to support your dreams. And it doesn't mean you have to do it. In fact, usually you don't have to do much of it if it's set up properly.
That's right. Just monitor it and tweak it here and there and build on top of it if it makes sense to.
Absolutely. So, if you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self who was getting ready to go into college, you were going to be an English major, what would you tell that fella?
I would say, hey, you ought to heed failure rule number four, which is the build your thing one and thing two dependency. Thing one is like this is like your enabler pursuit. That is like the practical thing that helps you build scaffolding to go after your aspirational North Star dream pursuit. Essentially, building redundancy and kind of like contingent plans into your life. I didn't really do that. I really was very much tunnel vision, particularly when I started my first record label. Didn't really have too much of a backup plan, and now I'm constantly thinking about layers and multiple redundancies and backup plans, diversifying, my identity, diversifying my skills, diversifying my fulfillment inputs, diversifying my financial, like everything is really about building those multi-layered structure. Because to me, I find, on the aggregate composite, that gives me as much happiness as possible in all the right buckets, whether it's money, whether it's fulfillment, whether it's peace, creative fulfillment, whatever it might be. I don't need 100% in all those buckets, but if I'm above 50% in all of them because I built structure to maintain that, that's pretty good,
I can hear your 18-year-old self talking in my head, going, but wait a minute.
Yeah, I
I
just
want
want to
to
do
do
this. I
this.
only want to do this. That's right. I'm going after this only. It's gonna work, believe me. And that's no, that was
And you know what? If your 18-year-old self wouldn't have done that and wouldn't have had all the bumps, you wouldn't be telling him that at this time.
I
It's
wouldn't. I know that's the irony of it. I mean,
backup plans.
I have 3 young children in their 20s, and I even have some friends kind of in their late 20s that I hang out with. And there's times where, I want to say, well, think about this and think about this. And then I'm like, they're not going to listen. They have to you just have to let them go out and do it. If they come back later, then we can talk about it. But like, some people just, they're, and I think you're right. There's part of us that's designed that way because we can't hear the possible risks sometimes, because otherwise we'll just be paralyzed and we won't move forward.
We might not need to, is the whole
Yeah,
point. I
that's
mean, if
true.
we're flexible and we're able to shift and tack and move as things hit us, just like you say, a bad plan's better than no plan, right? So even if it's a bad plan, and you get knocked off course, you kind of know where you're heading back
Yeah,
to.
right.
And
Exactly.
it's never a straight sail. It didn't really matter, actually. In fact, I think a lot of the fun is a journey. That's why as a sailor, it's like it's not about the destination, God forbid, because you might not get there for a while if you're
That's
counting on
right.
the wind. But
Totally true. Yeah, I write about that in the book, this concept of what I call a calling journey, right? Where you don't really have a singular calling, but you have a journey where you might have multiple callings and multiple things that build up to one calling or feed into one calling or feed into multiple callings. And it's more about like interpreting what you need to do next in that journey, right? Without even necessarily even have a clear vision of the end game all the time. And so I think it's somewhat of a maybe a spiritual or mysterious kind of thing to hear that internal spirit voice to know what you need to do next, when things aren't clear all the time.
And things never are anyhow, even if you think they are. So, That's
get
right.
over that part.
That's right. Embrace the texture of mystery and uncertainty. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, your book sounds fascinating. And how can people get a copy of this book, or what, how can they find you? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm most active on Instagram at Andrew Thorpe King, knowing the E on the end of Thorpe. Website is andrewthorpeking.com. And this is available anywhere you find books online,
Nice.
all four formats. So beautiful hardcover. There's a great audio book. There's ebook and paperback. So you can pretty much get anywhere you get books online.
Nice. Did you read it yourself? Did you do the audio?
I did not actually hired a narrator who's actually an actor who was in that show Twin Peaks, and he did a really good job. Had a really like urgent cadence to the way he delivered it. So I think it worked out really well. Next book I'll probably read, but it was
I
cool to
think it
hire.
would be great doing it your own audiobook. I really do. I think it'd be really fun.
Thank you. Yeah, I think next time I'm going to do that. But working with the publisher this time, I just went with the option of hiring a narrator. So, yeah.
Well, congratulations on your book. I
Thank you.
wish you much success. Everybody, pick up a copy and learn those seven things you need to know about failure and how to get yourself out of that bucket.
There you go. It's actually five, which makes it easier for me. You only have to learn five. So,
Five. You got five. You got it.
yeah.
Oh yeah, I wanted to say seven. I don't know. Seven seems to stick with me.
Everybody always has three rules or five rules or seven rules. That seems to be they're the numbers
All
people.
right. Okay, five rules. That's all you need to know out there, gang. So go ahead and pick
Right.
up a copy of the book. Check out the five rules. Follow Andrew because it's you're amusing and you're a lovely gray, a lovely guy. I really appreciate getting to know you. And now I know why we're talking, right? There's all every time I do a podcast like this, I understand why. And
Yeah.
yeah, it's been a pleasure and it's good luck with everything you do. And thank you for
Thank
being
you for having me on. It's very nice to meet you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. Until
Okay.
next time, guys, check it out. If you like this podcast, please give it a thumbs up. Please share it. Please buy a copy of the book. And until then, we'll see you next week. Take care.
Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to hear more, feel free to subscribe on the platform of your choice. Also, if you feel so inclined, I would truly appreciate a good rating from you to me. Have a stellar day.